Hey guys, what's up? It's Mark. I'm super excited to bring you this episode with my friend Josh Perry. He's a multiple brain tumor survivor and former professional athlete. When I was first restarting my show, I was like, I have to have on Josh because he's the prime example of someone who walks the walk and talks the talk, if you know what I mean. Now, as you guys know, if you listened to the intro, the first episode, every episode of this podcast is going to start off with a little freestyle rap that I wrote about Josh, about what we end up talking about to get the episode started. I hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, this has been your host, Mark Metry.
Yo, okay, Josh Perry and Mark Metry. We was told we was old on that you when born. We would never be nothing, and now we have leveled to something. But now we golden on this road of untold success. What a control mess. But we survived with the brain flow. Fear is just a dive, but I thought I arrived. Though, and you thought you arrived too. And where you ride on that bike, that be messed life. How to whip out the gammon knife, screw you, can't sit, get out my life. I wish we met sooner, Josh. Unlike that brain tumor, brainwash. Chasing time like it's on my watch. But I don't wanna watch, I wanna put my mind away. I know for a little bit, it's gonna be okay. But don't be out, step by step, we breaking it down. Josh's coaching helps you not break down. He helped me with my mental health. Now I feel like I got a gift to give back to the world. It's bigger than me and you, but I see it in both me and you. No, it's not just about the mindset. But my guy, the best, he got the high. When you press, you can go to Josh Perry to help you nonetheless. Put a set moves ahead like chess. Pick up the pen and the pad to get it off your chest. Now open that mind, we got Josh on as a guest. And what you'll find is a mind well designed. Now open those eyes, this the Mark Metry Show. Without further ado, let's go.
Woo! What'd you think, Josh?
Oh, yeah, man, that was sick. That was awesome. I did not expect you to make a freestyle about me and all that. So that was cool. I knew you said that you were going to do a freestyle, but I was just like open to whatever came up. So that's awesome. Man. Yeah, I love that.
But yeah, man, I wrote this rap about you. And, you know, I tried to throw in some things in there, like when you ride on that bike, that BMX life, how to whip out that gamma knife, screw you, cancer, get out of my life.
There's a lot of specifics in there. That's awesome.
Yeah, did you like it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I know it makes sense because I know who is one of your inspirations in this genre of music, but it reminds me a lot of you know, what I feel and like how you flow through it, like Logic's music. It just telling that story, but like through like I don't know the proper terminology, but like the cadence or whatever it is,
the flow,
like it reminds me, like he's who pops up in my mind. So I know that's like one of your big inspirations, which I love his music as well. So yeah. I think that was awesome. And I think I saw one of your first public appearances with this new not new for you, but new putting it out there was a, I forget what they call it on TikTok, but like, Logic put out a beat or a verse and then like went silent for the beat. And then you hopped in and I was like, so stoked to see that. So yeah, no, man, I loved it. And I just love, regardless of how you feel about it, I just love seeing you do it because I think that's the biggest thing that people, you know, struggle with is just following what they really feel called to do and what they're passionate about and putting out their own creativity in the world. And more people need to see people like us doing that and inspiring other people to do it. And so above all, I just appreciate you, you know, throwing out your passions like that. And I know you're putting in the work and I really enjoyed it. So thank you. Thank you for making that about me. That was awesome.
Yeah, dude, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And you know, it's interesting. I remember we had this conversation on your podcast, but you know, personally for me, I feel like my brain has always been sort of like musically integrated, you know, and there's multiple forms of intelligence. And for example, like music is one of those forms of intelligence, you know, and I remember even like before I started making music, I literally remember in like ninth grade high school, like literally didn't write a single song, nothing. I remember my best friend tells me, he's like, you know what, Mark, I kind of randomly feel like you're going to be like a rapper one day. And I say this because I remember in fourth grade, I was in music class. And this is a time in my life where, like, in third grade, fourth grade, I was hit with, like, a lot of racial bullying, and social anxiety was sort of starting to be a thing for me. And I remember being in this fourth grade class with the teacher, and I remember I ended up, like, I don't even know what it was. I remember I, like, played piano in front of the entire class. And I remember the teacher just, like, yelling at me because I just, like, did it wrong. And this was, like, in front of everybody. And I, like, remember ever since that moment, that, like, musical part of my brain just, like, shut down. And it wasn't until I was, like, 12 years old and I started making YouTube videos, like, Call of Duty video game videos. And I would actually take Logic songs and I put them in the background of, like, the videos, you know? And so I say all that because maybe in about 2018, that's where all of a sudden, as I started to, like, you know, it had been a few years as I was like meditating, starting to get my life together, starting to, like, restore my brain. Then all of a sudden I just, like, started to, like, kind of feel like the music back in my spirit. And as that sort of started to happen more and evolve more, then I started to write, and then I started to create, and then I started to share with people. And then now finally it's 2022 and I've kind of felt that this is, like, such a big part of me. And yet, like, what I do on the internet and for my career, speaking, podcasting, of course I still use my voice, but I felt like there was always, like, a separation between who I was versus who I was putting out there. And so for me, like, putting these in front of the podcast, it's just sort of like a fun way to just, like, put it out there. And I also want to inspire people too, you know, and whether it's for them to put out their creativity or whether it's for them to explore their passions. And so I appreciate you saying all that. And that's kind of like the backstory behind this. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on as one of the first guests on this new podcast relaunch, man. So thank you for being here. I'm glad you said all that.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you for having me. And I think what comes to mind with all that you just said is two things. You know, that's a great example of being back as a young person and having some outside noise crush us internally and the negative emotions that surround that experience and then the limiting beliefs that unconsciously are created and then how that compounds over our life to where we're like, we're not sharing our truth, which was the second piece, is speaking our truth. And that's what you're doing today. And that's what I, you know, I'm doing today in my own respected way. And we both have very similar, but very different in the micro of what our journeys have looked like, but it led us on this path of what we do today and why we do it. And that gap that you spoke about is something that I've come to terms of understanding the last couple of years. And it started with back in 2015, Dr. Joe Dispenza talked about this gap in one of his books, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, and how for him, he felt this gap of who he felt he was inside and what he was projecting the outside world based upon his unconscious beliefs of other people's perceptions of him. And so what other people perceived him as and he was trying to show up as was far left or right compared to where he was internally. And so the gap of who he was internally and what he was trying to put out to please other people's expectations. I experienced that myself with BMX and what I went through in the, you know, my 8 or 9 year professional career as a BMX athlete of who I felt that was inside as that continued to evolve as a human being and all the different priorities started to shift and passions grew and motives changed. I was still doing the thing that I identified as the BMX athlete, but inside I didn't feel fulfilled and I didn't feel like that was my calling in life. But other people expected me to show up that way. And I didn't know this. It was unconscious, but I didn't want to let them down because I didn't want to be judged. And I was afraid of being judged and I was afraid of changing. But I got to a point one day where it just, you know, many different reasons we can talk about. I know, these events I went through, but it was like, got to a point where I was like, no, like I feel deep down inside that this is who I am. And I want to express that. BMX allowed me to express part of that. But then I got to a point where I was hiding behind that success. I was hiding my insecurities behind that BMX success, but I didn't feel internally fulfilled and happy. So here we both are, you know, expressing ourselves in 2022. I would argue, as much as we can authentically, and with that comes fulfillment, true happiness, and the whole imposter syndrome and all those limiting beliefs kind of start to vanish, if not just dissipate 100%. And it comes from being on purpose for what you really choose to believe about your life and how you want to show up. So I love it, man.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. But what, say the name of the book that you just mentioned again.
Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
This is a great book. I recently read it, and I definitely recommend everyone to read it. And you know what you said, Josh, is so interesting, and it's kind of like, it reminds me of that quote where it's like, we all have two lives. The first life is kind of, you know, who we consider ourselves internally, that maybe we don't let a lot of people see. But then we have that second life, which is what other people are sort of seeing around us. And I remember for me, I felt this so strongly, especially when I was younger, especially going through social anxiety, especially with like the perception that even like my family had around me, my friends. And I remember it was like so hard to break out of it. And I think everyone listening to this has some realization of like what we're talking about. And I know for me personally, it was, you know, I'd be living my life. I'd be in these different, you know, interactions, talking with people. And whether it was sort of like a very deep internal part of me, I would just feel like, oh, I should say this or I should say that. But then I wouldn't. And I would just sort of be quiet, or I'd say something different. And then I would walk away from that interaction and be like, wait, like, why didn't I say this? And it's almost like a kind of like internal confusion, I feel like, about your identity. And it's so hard, whether you feel like you don't know who you are, or whether it's like in your case where you kind of fall down a life path and then you pick up this mask that is usually built around validation that you receive from others. And it could be good or bad, you know? So for you, it was becoming a professional BMX athlete. I would say for me, it was probably like, I've had different masks throughout my life. I remember when I was like 14, I started to get into like computers. I started to learn how to code, and everyone kind of knew me as like, oh, like the computer kind of nerd. And I remember I didn't necessarily enjoy that, but I also remember like people calling me something and knowing me something also felt a little bit good, you know? But I remember within that feeling like this internal struggle of like who I actually am, who I actually want to be seen as by my family, my friends, people who I don't know yet, the world, versus like where I currently am. And it's very hard. It's very like confusing. And like before you take that first jump into taking a step forward into who you actually are, it seems so hard. It seems so crazy. It feels like this is just like your life. And like, no matter what you do about it, you're just like in this box and you just like can't escape. And I don't think you really start to connect the dots until you start taking those steps forward, until you start taking actions forward and you start to see like, oh, this person laughed at my joke. Oh, this person gave me a compliment when I said this. And so you start to put yourself out there and the world starts responding back to you. But the other part about that too is that I don't think this game never ends. You know what I mean? And so I feel like we're constantly in this. I've gone through this to myself over the last couple of years, and it's definitely challenging. It's really, really challenging. And like, just, you know, the last thing I'll say too is like last week I got to speak at a middle school in Vermont, and I got to speak to this everybody in the entire middle school. And like, you know, seeing these sixth and seventh and eighth graders walk around, and you know, I gave a talk, and I mentioned a little bit about this in my talk. But I could tell, like, when I started talking about this, they were all interested. And maybe when you're young, you still have like that unlived potential. You still don't know what you can do, where you can go, what's possible. And so I just think that this is so, so important to talk about, because I think everyone feels this, whether you're like a 40-year-old dad who has like some like high executive position at a corporation, or whether you do this or whether you do that. I think we all have this problem. And I think for some of us, we need to like integrate more, but I think some of us need to like explore and do new things and take risks and be courageous if you've never done this before in your entire life. I don't know if that made any sense, but.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, that's why I love Dr. Nicole LaPera's work, you know, how to do the work is the title of her book, which is brilliant because the work never stops. But to understand how to do that work, to understand yourself, which goes, Dr. Joe's book, Breaking the Habit, dives deep into why we get stuck in the ways we do and how it could potentially be fueled at the beginning. And I know for me, what's helped me with Dr. Nicole's work is making sense of my past. Well, a lot of the people I learned from, but her work specifically, because I now have found that there was these human needs that weren't being met as a child from various different people in my life of being seen and being heard. And this is a great example of, you know, parenting from a place of love. You know, if we're crying as a child and the parent wants to soothe us, they say, oh, it's okay. There's nothing wrong. You know, and they're doing that out of love, but it's denying our reality and it's avoiding us feeling seen and heard. And so my pursuit into BMX, I didn't know this. I just was like, that's what I want to do. It was an escape for me. It was a passion. It brought so much joy to me, but it allowed me to express myself. And then the success allowed people to take notice of me, and I was feeling seen, and then I'd get interviewed and I was feeling heard. And then my story evolved with the brain tumor diagnosis and the surgeries and those types of things. And then I got asked to be on podcasts and to be in documentaries and all these different types of things. And I was like, oh, like people really want to hear me. And so that childhood need of not being seen or feeling seen or heard was starting to change. And then my identity got so wrapped up into the BMX letters after my name that that's who I was identified with that. And I did that thing every single day to the best of my abilities, unless I was injured, I couldn't. But for, you know, 10 plus years. And so when it came to me realizing this gap that was growing inside of me with all these shifts and priorities and values and motives in my life, then I was like, why is it so hard to change? And it was because I was so focused on my circumstances. And when I started to reflect back on to even when I was 21 in 2010 with the first brain tumor diagnosis and the surgery and what helped me overcome that, not just to survive, but get back to excelling at my profession and my dream as a BMX athlete, professionally competing and all that, what helped me was the focus and the difference of focus. And that's a, like, I'd say the number one purpose behind my work today and anything I do, interviews like this or conversations like this, interviews, podcasts, speaking, writing, coaching, it's to help people see beyond their circumstances with a simple shift of focus. And the greatest example I have of that, starting back in 2010, when I was given this diagnosis and the path ahead was for me was, you know, what do I do? This is that. It was surgery. That was the only option I had to save my life. So rather than focusing on the fear and the reality of the situation, which I acknowledged, but then once I acknowledged that reality of like, I could possibly die. I could possibly wake up blind, paralyzed. You know, the list goes on for me. Those two pages of risk that I had to sign off on agreeing to the surgery. So the difference of that situation that allowed me to overcome the circumstances that I was in with the brain surgery was rather than focusing on if I wake up, I shifted my focus to when I wake up, what will I do differently? How will I improve myself inside and out? How I show up as the best version of myself? And focusing on what I wanted to do with my life, which I was already doing. I was realizing a dream of mine as a child, and I wanted to continue living that dream. So I focused as much as I could on it, understanding to a degree at the time that I had no control of my life, but I had all the control of how I responded to my circumstance in that moment. So leading up to today, what I heard you talk about and what I've learned making sense of the last, you know, 13 years of my life now, starting from the first brain tumor diagnosis and three more, four more, and surgeries and radiation and all that, it's like we have a decision to make. And it's to either see our reality and our circumstances and be trapped there, no matter how painful it may be, it's possible to see beyond it. So we can choose to see the circumstance and just focus there, or we can see beyond it with a simple shift of focus of what do we want to be true? Here's the reality. There's no denying that, especially when it's very painful, when you can really feel mentally, emotionally, and or physically the pain. That's real. There's no denying that. There's no need to deny that. That's your reality. But there's an opportunity to shift your perspective and to focus on what you want to be true. And then that lays the groundwork for how do you make that happen? And being an athlete, it's second nature to me now, which I'm very thankful for. And I'm becoming aware of it more and more the last 6 years, I'd say. But it was always like, okay, what do I want to do? I want to do a backflip. All right, cool. Well, how do I do that? Well, I need to practice in a foam pit. I need to do this and that. I need to get all these fundamentals built before I can go to the foam pit. So there's my roadmap. And then just focusing on what I want to be true. And I got to do that. And so when it comes to real life examples outside of sports or whatever it is, to me, at the end of the day, it's just a shift in focus, because we know in neuroscience and psychology, all this stuff proves it. With a shift of focus, you get different thoughts. Those thoughts create different emotions that we feel in our body. That's the language of the body, is our emotions, our feelings. And that just continues the cycle of thinking and feeling. But more importantly, that influences the difference of behavior one way or the other. Either acting, as you mentioned earlier, or not acting. Either going left or going right, whatever it is. In that equation, you can't help but get different results in your life. And if they're not the best results you're looking for, which I guarantee they're not going to be right out the gate, that's okay, because you're making strides forward. You're creating momentum to change. And that's why breaking the habit of being yourself is so valuable to anyone in any aspect of their life, because it's breaking down the fundamentals of why change is challenging, and how we often get so trapped in what we did for so long in the past that we create all these neurochemicals and these addictions to those neurochemicals and all these things that hardwire our thinking and feeling and behaving in this, you know, unified form that becomes what we call autopilot. Mm-hmm. And so when we realize that we're trapped in autopilot and we want to create a change and we go to make that change, our body is signaling different things to us. And these signals are telling us the unknown is scary. So, oh, just, you know, try again tomorrow, or you're not good enough, or you'll never succeed, or your parents never did that. How could you do that? Or you, where you come from, no one does that. Like all these things. And it traps us in the past. So we're living in the present as our past self. And it's easy to see how our future is going to be defined unless we shift our focus and therefore shift how we show up intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And then we can't help but get new results and or create our reality, as I like to say, and change our reality. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's challenging, but it's really simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And as long as you keep that focus of what to do and how to do things differently to get the result that you want, and make sure your focus is on what you want while not denying your reality, but something as simple as saying, I don't want to be broke anymore. The unconscious mind doesn't process negatives. So it's like the unconscious mind is, you know, it signals to us in images. So it speaks to us in images, like our dreams. That's the unconscious mind speaking to us. And there's a lot of different interpretations of that. But saying, I don't want to be broke, or I don't want to be unhealthy, it just hears the unhealthy or the broke part. So it's important to shift the focus and language too, to be specific and positive. So rather than saying, I don't want to be unhealthy, what is a very simple shift is, what do you want? I want to be healthy. So focus on that, and then focus on how to do that. And then you can't help but get a new reality or result, which changes your reality. So that's all that came to mind from what you just shared. And that's the things I know you and I both love talking about and studying on our own and helping people in our own, you know, unique ways. At the end of the day, it's what can you do to see beyond your circumstance, and what do you want? What does it look like? Yeah. What does it feel like? What does it sound like? Who are you doing it with? And why is that meaningful to you? AKA, why is that valuable to you? Which creates what we all, you know, talk about is, how can I be more motivated? Well, it starts with your values and your vision.
Yeah, I love that. And one of my favorite quotes is, focus is more important than intelligence. Focus is more important than intelligence. And, you know, what's interesting is that I remember for me, you know, really like in the darkest time of my life, when I was like suicidal back in 2015, and, you know, my brain broke and I was basically walking around, and I remember just like, you know, going through what you just said of like, my mind would tell me all these things of like, you know, I don't belong here. I have no value. And for me, I think what really started to shift is I just started to ask myself is like, what if I could get out of this? Like, what if I could get out of this and I could actually like use my story to help other people, the millions of people who are just like younger versions of myself, or maybe they're older, that are in the same exact position. And I remember when I started to think like that, that was really one of the biggest changes. And what I was doing, like you said, is I was thinking outside of my situation. I was thinking ahead of my situation. And I think that so many people, when they try to do this, exactly what you said is they try to do something different, something that they should be doing. They've never done it before. They do it. And then all of a sudden, because your brain and your nervous system has been operating in a certain way for over a decade, it gives you different neurochemicals that say, hey, this is foreign, this is uncomfortable, and it just puts you back to whatever you are feeling, you know? And like, that's why even if you're doing the right thing, you can still feel fear. You can still fear a certain sense of anxiety. And for like the average person who doesn't really know that much about how the brain works, it seems common sense. Like, oh, if I feel bad or if I feel negative or if I feel fear when I do this, I shouldn't do it. When in reality, that's not the truth. And I think for some people, including myself, you see yourself live life every day. And whether it's speaking up or doing something differently, your brain hits you with these chemicals. It shuts you down. And then I feel like a lot of us get into this mindset of like, nothing out there like works. When in reality, it doesn't necessarily have to do with whatever it is that you're doing that's going to work. It's really you. And so I think for so many of us, we have like literally spent every day thinking about this, trying to do this, but then your brain shuts you down. And then I feel like you get to this place where you're just like, oh, I'm just like stuck like this. Like even if I wanted to do something differently, I couldn't do it. And it gets to this point where I think like you become cynical. You become very skeptical of everything. You know, like you come across a book, you come across a podcast, whatever it is that might have great information that can actually help you. But then you're like, oh no, this doesn't work. Or, oh no, this person is just trying to make money. Or they're just like, they were just like born successful. And they're just like saying this stuff, you know? So I know for me, that was like a big thing. And I think it really wasn't until I had to experience like some drastic, you know, neurochemical change, I would say, that got me to kind of like wake up and realize that it was possible. And I'm not sure if it worked exactly for you. And, you know, I've heard your story 1,000 times, but I'm sure a lot of people haven't. For you, you were just on your BMX path. You were on your path riding your bike. And then what was it? You started to get headaches that kind of had you stop in your tracks and look at things differently. Or tell us about that and how that kind of, you know, whether you interpret it as a sign from life or just something that kind of happened. Like what was that for you in terms of like life kind of pausing you being like, oh crap, like Josh, you got to look this way. If that makes sense.
Yeah. It was about a year and a half of going through classic brain tumor symptoms. Now I know that, but at the time I didn't, I just was having debilitating headaches and migraines on and off. They progressed over that year and a half. They progressed to where they were every day, which started to create vision problems and nausea and vomiting. And it would get so bad that my friends would have to drive me to urgent care in the ER multiple times. And I always sent home with pain pills and told, you know, even though I was asking and I paid for health insurance, you don't need a scan. I was 21, in shape, professional athletes, and they would just, or professional athlete, and they would just be judging me by my cover and saying, headaches are quite normal. Here's some pain pills. Come back if you need more. Here, take these to manage the pain. Jesus. And now it makes sense because where the tumor was located and how large it was pressing onto my optic nerve, which was affecting my vision and creating all of this pressure and these, creating these symptoms that I was experiencing. But it wasn't until I hit my head while training one day, my vision wasn't so bad. It was getting to the point where I was riding off muscle memory and accepting suffering and vision problems were going to be a part of my reality. And I was going to do whatever I could to continue doing what I was doing, which was living my dream. And so I took on that part of suffering as my reality. And it took that head injury to get an MRI to finally look at my brain. And that's when they told me, there's a brain tumor there and it's quite large. And if you want to be able to continue living, you have to have surgery immediately. And there's probably a chance that you never ride your bike again. And getting back to daily tasks, it's going to be a long road ahead of you. And so it was that moment where I first started to wake up and audit my life. And that was the catalyst to like my auditing process, as I refer to it, and auditing how I eat, how I sleep, how I live, my relationships, the content I consume or don't, how I communicate with others, like all these different aspects of being a holistic human being. And going back to what you said earlier about focus, something that's helped me dramatically is the understanding of what we focus on expands. And so those questions that you started your response to what I was saying earlier of like, how can I, or I like the question, what would it take? What we're doing is we're shifting our mindset and our focus to something beyond our circumstances. And when we can get really clear and focus on that vision that we're working towards, and we can make it real by thought alone, we can feel that. And we know this through meditation. There's so much data to show all this, but like just thought alone. It doesn't need to be an actual experience. You can create the experience in your mind, but every time you shift your focus to thinking about what you want to experience in life, what you want to create, who you want to be doing things with, who you want in your life, what do you want to be doing every day? It doesn't matter what aspect of life. It could be, you know, school, sports, business, you know, relationships, whatever it is. When you can get so clear in thought and focus on how that will make you feel and focus on those feelings, then your body will start producing chemicals for you to actually feel that. That's the language of the body, is our feelings, it's our emotions. And then that will inspire you to do something different. And it doesn't need to be something dramatic, but it's just something simple, something that's different. And I get caught in this every day. Like we all do. That's why I love Dr. Nicole's book, How to Do the Work. And she is a fundamental theme of that. The work doesn't stop. We don't just become these enlightened beings and we know everything and nothing changes. We just continue to progress. Like we're going to be faced with obstacles. But the difference of doing the work and making it a new lifestyle is you're better able and equipped to handle those circumstances that are undesirable with the understanding that you don't control anything outside of yourself. And to a large degree, we kind of can't. I know this is a whole different conversation. I have a friend who always challenges me on this in a nice way, but he's like, do we really have control over it? Like if a car is coming at you, are you just going to stand there? Or is that the car that's like provoking you to jump out of the way? Like, you know, do you really control yourself? And so there's arguments there, but for the sake of this conversation, simply speaking, we can agree that to a large degree, we control the way we think and the way we feel and the way we behave. The difference is how aware of that programming that we have, that conditioning to be able to control it. And another thing that's helped me so much in my life was that first diagnosis. And people hear me say this and they think I'm crazy, but I'm extremely grateful for that moment because it woke me up. It fueled me to pull the curtain back in my life and ask how I was showing up, how I could have caused this, how I can prevent it. And it started, like I said, that auditing process that I just live my life by now. And it's just always coming back to the drawing board of how am I creating my external reality? Because we know our external reality is just a projection of our inner world, our beliefs, our mindset, our health, all those things. It's projected into how we see things and how we experience things. And it's for simple conversation today, as you know, our ego casts a shadow. And so there's these different elements of who we are, this dual reality that we live with internally and externally of good and bad, you know, positive and negative, like all these things that are constantly being bounced back and forth. But at the end of the day, the simplest thing to consider is how are you at cause for your external reality? How is what they're doing triggering you? How is what you're witnessing a problem for you? And if there's any challenges in your life, how are you creating them or not trying to, or not, not trying, but not finding a solution or not doing something that could be better? And it's that optimization. And I love that word optimize. And that's heavily influenced from my sports background. It's how do I change this? And I've had to find a fine line with the accountability piece of my life. It's sometimes I'm like too hard on myself towards debilitating, but then I don't want to be, you know, a victim. I don't want to be like, oh, it's not me, it's them, or it's that, or it's this, it's, you know, whatever it may be. But a big belief that I have, and I think I shared this with you last time we spoke, and it's tattooed on my hand, it's C is greater than E. And what that means to me is being at cause for our reality is greater than being at effect to our reality. To me, that's the equation of empowerment. As soon as you accept that you're the cause, not that you did it, not that you're responsible for it, but you're causing this experience in your life. As soon as you do that, then you have to also accept that you're the solution to the problem. Mm. And that to me is everything. And so at the end of the day, if we can just shift our perspective of what we're experiencing in our life and understand we're causing that, not that we created that or we had that person do that thing or we get cut off, that was our fault. It's not about fault or blame. It's about taking accountability and being at cause and understanding that if you're at cause, then you can also cause a change. And it's not waiting for this to feel that, you know, when I get the job, I'll feel successful. It's feeling successful now. It's being defined by that vision and creating an identity around that. And that's going to allow you to create the path forward. And then in time, and letting go of the time and the whole constraints around controlling time and how it's going to happen. Ultimately, it's just why, what, and why. Focusing on those two things and letting go of control, understanding you're at cause for reality. I think those have been the most profound things for me that have helped. And it started with that when I was 21, living my dream and some. I was friends with like my hero that I had posters up on my wall and other, you know, heroes of mine on my wall, you know, posters on my wall. I was friends with them. I was competing with them. I was traveling the world. I was riding X Games and Dutour and all these big contests. And then all of a sudden my world came crashing down. I thought I was going to die. In a split second, my reality shifted because of the information that came in through my ears and what that did internally to change my thoughts. And I got focused on that I may die. And I felt that. And it took me some time. It was about a week and a half to where I started to shift my focus to if I'll wake up, when I wake up, how will I change for the better? And what will I be doing? And I went all in on that. And I believe that that's the one thing, if anything else, it's that one thing that helped me overcome that circumstance, not just to survive, like I mentioned earlier, but to thrive and to continue doing that to where I've gotten to the point now where I'm so fulfilled focusing on how I can help other people do the same. So much so that after the third brain tumor diagnosis in 2017, I walked away from that dream on my own terms. I have friends that have played in the NFL that were like, dude, that's special. I got to a point where I couldn't work. I was just too slow or no one wanted me. So I didn't have any, you walked away. And I think it's because all the things I learned and how it helped me get so focused on purpose to help other people. But it started with that first wake up call, as I refer to it. And I do what I do. And I would argue that you do what you do so we can help other people avoid those catastrophic events of being suicidal, of having a brain tumor, of, you know, almost dying in our own respected ways. So that way people can be inspired to change from a place of gratitude and inspiration and joy rather than such severe pain and suffering like we went through.
Yeah. And it's totally possible, you know, and I remind myself of all those things that you said of, you know, reminding myself that, you know, like, again, it's not necessarily my fault or it's not necessarily my responsibility, but I'm responsible for myself. And if I'm part of the equation of what caused this, then I'm also the solution. I love that. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, and especially what you said too about like, you know, your experience of life is a reflection of what you've got kind of going on the inside. And, you know, I think people, you know, take that like figuratively or like as a metaphor, but like that's literally the truth. And like, I know this 100%. Sometimes I forget. Sometimes I got to remind myself.
Yeah, we're
but I know this 100%. Yeah. And I have to remind myself, but I remember, you know, like living the first 18 years of my life and everywhere I would go, it just feel like people were very unfriendly. It felt like the world was just sort of like a black and white depressing place. And as I started to work on my brain, work on my mind, really retrain myself, that's when I like literally saw a visual shift in actually my vision. And like, for example, if you look at the signs too, they've even showed that people who have a problem with like their serotonin neurotransmitter, which will happen to you if you have, you know, undiagnosed, untreated, unmanaged mental health issues, you literally see the world in a black and white place where like you, the colors in your vision are not that saturated. And so I literally experienced that. And so I know exactly what it is. And I always have to remind myself of that. But I think what's really important about everything you said is like you went through, you know, you were living your dream life, basically. You got hit, you literally fell down, you had to go get an x-ray, they told you had a brain tumor, you went through a lot of pain trying to figure out like what am I going to do with my life, but then eventually you kind of reach the conclusion that you're on today that you just said. And you know, different brain tumors have you know, come back in your life, but you're still like going strong. And you know, I'm just curious to ask you like you know, like obviously there's different kinds of cancer. Obviously there's different levels of how much it affects people's lives. But I think I read a statistic the other day that I was like one out of every two people in America have some form of cancer. I don't know if that's 100% right, but like that blew my mind. And personally for me, like I have an aunt who, you know, she came to America like a few years ago, got cancer. It's looking pretty serious. You know, so she's in all different kinds of treatments and it's just very hard, you know, to go through that. So I can't even imagine you going through that and then you thinking and realizing what you just told me or some version of that because you know, it's tough, man. And and I'm just like curious to ask you, like, when you, like, as a cancer thriver, like, what would you tell someone who either like has cancer or someone who has like a loved one who has cancer? I know that's a very open-ended question. I'm just asking you because I don't even know what I would say. So I'm just curious to like get your take on that, because it's a very, very common problem.
Yeah. And there's so much there. And I think for me, what I've learned now, I would change how I'd respond to your question. And what I'd tell someone with any face of adversity is, one, don't deny your reality, feel it, express it. By expressing what you're feeling, or by feeling your feelings, you're expressing it, you're getting it out of you. That's a form of release. So don't try to deny your reality. It's okay. I went through a lot of that with, you know, because I was embarrassed, I was weak, or whatever it was. So that's the first thing, is just feel whatever you got coming up, because we know trauma isn't what happens to us. It's what happens inside of us. And if you try to deny that, you're trapping that trauma inside of you, and it's going to create more havoc. The next thing I try to, or I'd suggest saying to people, which I do quite often, was what helped me. And I share from personal experience, so that way I'm not coming off across talking down to someone, being superior, or trying to, you know, I can, and that's what's unique about me. I've been in very many different situations that I can literally relate and understand another person in my own way. And so when anyone going through any type of cancer or tumor diagnosis or whatever it is, it comes back to focus. It's so easy to get trapped in the focus of the circumstances and to feel more of that, and to have the correlating thoughts. And then that makes us feel more of what we want. So it comes back to focus. And what I always suggest people doing is what helped me is focus on what you want to experience in your life, what you want your life to be like. And from there, you know, there's a learning that I've taken on, a belief I've taken on, that health is internal. And I mentioned this earlier, I was judged by my cover of my, you know, physical appearance that deemed me healthy, which deemed me unnecessary for an MRI, CAT scan, x-ray, whatever I was asking for at the time of my brain, because I didn't have any visible symptoms. But now I know health is internal. And that's what led me to my passion with metabolic health. Yeah, exactly. I didn't have a pain pill deficiency. We'll put it that way. You know, I don't believe anyone does. It's health is internal. And that belief has led me to finding metabolic health. It started with Dr. David Perlmutter, which I know you've talked to him on the podcast in the past, and he's been a very important person in my life, and got to meet him a couple times and, you know, have some conversations and things like that, which was, you know, even more amazing. It was just like, you know, another layer. But his work is what changed my life, because it was talking about metabolic health and how that correlates and creates brain health, resilience, longevity, or the opposite. And so it was another piece of empowerment. So with the not denying your reality by feeling what's coming up and expressing it and acknowledging it and getting it out of you, that's step one. Step two is focusing on what you want. It's so easy to get trapped in these circumstances when it's painful, it's, you know, mentally draining, intellectually, spiritually draining, all those things, because you feel defeated. You feel like there's no light. The light comes from the third piece of, you know, integrating that focus and, you know, doing the mental or the, you know, the writing or whatever it is of like what that vision looks like for you. And thankfully I had so much footage of me riding to just go all in on that focus of this, like literally seeing myself doing what I wanted to do when I woke up from surgery. And that was my goal. That was my aim. That became what I was motivated by. That became my North Star. That's how I defined myself. It wasn't my circumstance. I was defining myself by what I was going to be doing after I overcame the circumstance. And another thing I want to say in that is, for me, what I've recognized with the last year's events of having the seizures, waking up in the ER and seeing my fiance, and I just had this emotional release of like, I've been holding this unconscious thought and emotion attached to it of like being a burden to my family. Because for me, it's just my life. I've taken on the reality of like, this is what I'm experiencing, and this is what I need to overcome, and this is what I need to do to overcome that, because this is the cards I was dealt. I can't change those cards necessarily, but I can change how I play them. So for me, I just take on everything. I'm very good at compartmentalizing things, sometimes to a downfall, especially when it comes to expressing those emotions, which is something I've been working consciously in the last 2 years to express myself with the emotions I've suppressed for so long and to release those traumas. And but what really came up for me was I was like, I felt like such a burden to other people. And I know it was Russell Brand spoke about this, and he's like, I'd rather be the one with the mental health challenges, because it, for me, it's just something that like, and I think it's easy for people to say that when they're the ones experiencing it. But for me, it's like, you know, going through these challenges, like I'd rather have that burden myself than other people that I love and care about. But at the same time, they looking on the outside in, they can't do anything. And that's what I was recognizing, was just, I felt like a burden because of what I was putting onto my friends, my family for, you know, going on 12 years now. I'm 8 months out of a second brain surgery, which I was awake for, which is crazy of its own. But that burden, that sense of guilt and anger towards myself was becoming really apparent. So that's where it goes back to the first piece of advice, is just stop trying to deny your reality. Feel everything that's coming up. Acknowledge it. Don't judge it. You're going through some shit. It's all good. But at the end of the day, it goes to step two, is like focusing on what you want. What do you want to be true? And I've talked to surgeons that were like, this patient should have made it. But for some reason, they believe that they weren't going to, and their body, you know, didn't wake up or respond well. But they, you know, all the, you know, the paperwork, all the stats and everything showed that they had a great chance, but they gave up. And I think it's dolphins can actually just literally just check out. They get so stressed or depressed, they can just go and just die. I forget if that's an actual fact or not. I heard someone say that in a talk once, and I was like, wow, like that's, we'd have to fact check that. But that's like, they're so conscious that they get so stressed that they just check out. So again, fact check me on that. But that was interesting to learn. But something else that you said that I wrote down two things. One of them I already said, health is internal, and metabolic health can be measured. So unlike a diet where it's, you know, carnivore or vegan, I use those because they're extreme opposites of each other, or like, you know, the paleo, whatever. Those are a framework of what to eat, what not to eat, how much, this or that. Metabolic health is by looking at the health of your metabolism by biomarkers and looking at your glucose levels, looking at your A1C and like how those correspond to different health markers and disease factors and C-reactive protein for inflammation. Like we can check all these things, which is really fascinating. So metabolic health to me is everything, because they actually be measured, not tracked, but measured and tracked. You know, being vegan just means you're not eating animal-based foods. Being carnivore means you're just not eating plant foods. But it doesn't really say much about our health unless we look inside, which is what I learned the hard way by not getting an image of my brain. What I wanted to say earlier was something you mentioned was, you know, when it comes to our unconscious mind, its main objective, besides, I think it's the ego's main objective, is preserving the body. But our unconscious mind is trying to affirm our beliefs. And that's why it projects so much. So when you're talking about focus, and if you're depressed and all you think the world is just dark and negative and scary, which if you watch the media, that's what they paint that picture. There's so much positivity going on. That's the duality of reality that we live within. To have good, there's bad. You know, babies die, but also babies are born. You know, humans die, but they're born every day. Like that's the cycle of life. But when you're in such a dark state and your beliefs match that, your unconscious mind, what you focus on expands. Your unconscious mind just is trying to affirm your beliefs to yourself, because that means you're safe. There's no threat to yourself. Having your belief structures threatened is a stress response, which dives into a fear response to protect you. We see this with political discourse all the time. No one's trying to understand one another because they all feel threatened. I would argue they all feel unheard at the core human level. So no one's feeling safe to listen to the other. They're like, they're bombarding and like cutting each other off or saying, yo, you're wrong. Like, and I think at the end of the day, we're all trying to get the same achievement of being healthy, happy, successful human beings, helping other people, I would argue. But at the end of the day, why focus is so important and clarity on your belief structures and your conditioning, your programming, because your unconscious mind, it's trying to do its best to affirm whatever you believe. So if you believe that the world is dark and scary and negative and people are assholes and like, you know, this and that, that's what you're going to be finding more, because your unconscious mind is unconsciously pulling up your awareness to affirm that belief. But if you become aware of that and then you shift and say, oh, with all the darkness there is, there's such light and positivity and love. Let me go try and find that. I think Gary Vee said this a couple of years ago, whatever you're trying to find, especially on the internet these days, you'll find it. It just matters about what is your intention? What is your focus? What are you trying to find? If you believe X, you can go find X. If you believe Y, you can go find Y. You know, it comes back to what are you really searching for and why is that important to you? And what do you want to do about changing your life? So really, you know, with anyone going through any form of adversity, it doesn't matter what it is, those same principles apply. One, stop trying to deny your reality and express your emotions. Feel what's coming up for you. Number two, you know, direct your focus to what you want. Here's the reality. Cool. You know, many people have been there. Many people have survived. What is it that they did? What is it the way they thought, the way they felt, their behaviors? And I refer to that as virtual mentors. You know, there's in neurolinguistic programming, there's a phrase called modeling excellence. Finding someone that did something remotely close to what you want to do and modeling them intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, energetically, however they showed up. Doing your best to do that. I did that with BMX. I didn't know that at the time. I just was like, that's what I want to do. How do I do that? And that's like how my mind works, is like the question why and how. I was that kid. Why? How does this work? Why does that work? You know, how that worked for my favor. And that goes back to that point of focusing on what you want to be true and how, what would it take? Because that open question can eliminate any emotional charge of negativity to the circumstance. What would it take allows you to think beyond it and just create that hypothetical. And then focusing in on that, you're going to feel what that experience is like, because that's how the brain works. It's very, very complex and smart, but it's also trapped in the primitive state that hasn't caught up to this modern technology society that most of our fears are created. They're not actual life-threatening fears. And that's what's interesting about my story. The last thing I'll say on this point is I get asked a lot about the diagnosis and how that changed my reality, how that affected me. I don't get asked so much about the moment before surgery. And that's something that's interesting to me, because in the diagnosis, there was no threat to my life. There was just a difference of information that came into my brain. I was literally told you have a brain tumor, and I equated that to death on my own. Going into surgery week and a half later, there was a real chance that I would die or not wake up or wake up paralyzed. But the work I had done eliminated the fear to a degree, because I wasn't focusing on it. It was a part of it, but I somehow understood, shift that focus to what I want. And so that's just a great example, perceived fear for our lives versus real fear for our lives. And we live in a society where we're all afraid of so many things, and fear and stress plays the same role as trying to protect ourselves. But we're not trying to run from wild animals anymore. We're not afraid that we're not going to eat, or we're not going to find shelter, or whatever it is. We're afraid of being judged. We're afraid of failing because we'll be judged. We're afraid of, you know, what if this, what if that, what are they going to think? We're afraid of other people. And it's all this man-made bullshit that doesn't really matter. But because the unconscious mind is mostly operating, it takes that focus and that looking at ourselves and asking ourselves, how am I creating this experience right now? It has nothing to do with other people and other things other than the influence it has on my unconscious internal conditioning and programming. And when you can ask those questions and be real and authentic and open with yourself, then that's where the possibility of change really comes from. And that's why Dr. Nicole's book, How to Do the Work, and Dr. Joe's book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, is such a perfect duo, because it gives you the framework to do that. The next step is, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to accept that part of your reality and change? Or do you, you know, want to stay where you are?
It's almost like if you're listening to this and you're in some kind of adversity, you almost like, I think the best way I could put it is like, you almost have to like delude yourself, and almost in a good way, fall into like a sense of delusion to get you to like focus on that future reality that, realistically speaking, you're like, that's probably not possible. That's not going to work. That's not going to be possible for me, whatever. And it's almost like you have to enter into this reality where it's like every day you're just going to focus on what it's going to take to do what you got to do to get there. And if you can do that, like for enough days, you will 100% get there, you know? And it's like that very classic quote from Henry Ford. And it's like, whether you think you're right or you're wrong, you're right. And so I think that's like the best way to think about it. And that's why when I look back at whether it's my journey or your journey, I definitely think that being like young, almost being naive, I feel like can almost be an advantage, you know. And a lot of my friends are older, And you see this in kind of people who are older, especially like kind of elderly people, where and again, like there's a lot of smart, very wise, like awesome people. I'm not trying to say anything like that against older people, but you can kind of see how older people are much more stuck in their ways than, for example, kids, you know. And I see this every day, and it's very in front of my face. So Josh, thank you for saying that. And you know, one random thing that I'd love to talk about here, and if I was on Humans 2.0, I probably wouldn't talk about this, but you mentioned how when you kind of had headaches, you went to the doctor and they're like, hey, here are some pain pills. I don't know if you've ever seen this. Have you ever seen this TV show called Dope Sick?
I have not. Let me write that down.
Yeah, you should. Like, I don't even watch TV shows, dude, but like that is an amazing TV show. And they basically talk about, how America got so deep into like this opiate crisis, this epidemic. And, you know, I don't know if you have any like experience with this or anything like that, but I remember for me, like growing up in a small town, I didn't really realize it then, but like so many people were addicted to these pills. I have friends in Connecticut, all of them. There's so many people, whether it's in a small town, especially on the East Coast or in the middle of America. This TV show, it like literally goes through how this all happened. And like, if you told me all these different things that happened, whether it's between the pharmaceutical company and the government and the FDA, I'd be like, dude, that's 100% a conspiracy theory. But like, you should watch this TV show. And for anyone else out there who's interested about this, because it's a huge problem, you know. And and I was talking with someone the other day, who we both know him. He is like a former addict, and he told me that when he was in rehab, he ended up going to rehab like twice. And the first time he went to rehab, in kind of like his group of people who are in rehab, most of them were in there for alcohol for the most part. And he told me the second time he went there, it was years later, almost all of them were in rehab for opiates. There was like one other person with alcohol. And like, whether it's, you know, whether it's a brain tumor, whether it's social anxiety, whether it is like addiction and pain pills, there are definitely like so many different, you know, like obstacles and like, I don't want to say distractions, but like threats, where it's like, if you don't know these certain things, even good people like get stuck in these scenarios that they don't know how to get out of. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm just curious, like, because I know for me, like, you know, I had a surgery once and they gave me pain pills. And again, like, I'm not 100% against them. I'm sure in certain situations, you know, you probably need them. I'm sure you could ask your doctor, but it's like a huge problem, you know. And especially I look at that and addiction, and especially like mental health, and it's like a huge problem. Like, I'm here in Massachusetts, huge problem with opiates. I know in many other states there's a lot of issues, and now it's kind of starting to, you know, the government is starting to address it and do different things and whatnot, but it's still a huge problem. And I don't think enough people like know about it. So it's just interesting to have heard you say that, how it's just like, oh, hey, here are some pain pills. If you know, you said, you know, if you still have them, come back, they'll give you a refill. It's just interesting to kind of think about that. And yeah, there's a lot of other pills too, but it's interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I know, you know, Cape Cod out in Massachusetts, in the construction world, there's a huge problem with opioids. And I didn't know that they were, you know, at the time I didn't know how addicting they were, but I've had friends in the BMX world that, you know, got, and I can share this because they share it publicly, and because they got out of it, but they, you know, had an injury. They didn't know pain pills were addictive, and they didn't know they'd be addicted to them. And then that led them to getting into heroin and then being an addict, and then just so much negativity that, you know, one of my friends specifically, he got himself out of it, and now his work revolves around speaking and, you know, fighting that battle and bringing more awareness to it. But it's just like in nutrition and health, it's like when you ask these questions, like, why is this so? And, you know, it's so obvious, like, but like, why is it still a problem? Like, it's unfortunately, in this country, it traces back to money, and it traces back to these corporations, and then how politicians are getting funding, and then what they're feeling objected or pressured to, you know, protect, and this and that. And it's just, it's sad. I mean, and look at like Coca-Cola, for example. They spend millions of dollars a year advocating against how sugar is bad. And we know from, you know, Ansel Keys and the Harvard study about sugar not being bad, and how it was like all funded to, you know, cherry pick and this and that. It's like, it's so terrible. But at the end of the day, you know, complaining about things isn't going to change anything. We have to have conversations like what we're doing right now and educate people and make allow them to show up and make their own choices that they feel is best suited for themselves. And that's what I'm doing. That's what you're doing. And at the end of the day, it's about taking on the responsibility for ourselves to lead by example and inspire the people to do so with education, open conversations that people feel safe to show up and to share, and to most importantly, again, lead by example and to keep doing that. And it's, yeah, it's unfortunate just because I was, you know, I was like, I got pissed off when I was like, it's so easy for me. I can just complain about any injury I have. And if I had a problem, I'd be getting that problem fueled every single day that I wanted to, because there was an injury I had. I broke a rib, and it was terrible. It was probably the worst injury pain wise I've experienced. And the recovery was just took so long. Like everything you do, like cough, breathe, move, like it just affects it. Man. And I was like, I don't want pain pills. Like if it gets that bad, I'll come back, but I don't want, cause I know Mira had just passed at the time. And there was a bunch of other things going on. And I was like, I don't want to have this stuff in my system. And they wouldn't let me leave without taking the prescription. And I was like, fine, just write it. And I threw it out on the way out in the trash because I was just being spiteful at that point because they weren't listening to me. But I was like, I don't want it. Same thing after my ACL surgery. I did whatever I could holistically to not take the pain pills. And I've been in situations where they were necessary. I've been in surgeries. I've been awake for surgery where they're necessary. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's just there's a fine line there. And I think it comes back to that education and that awareness and then making the decision myself. Do I want to risk this? Is it that bad, or do I need it? And then, you know, having that guidance and support. Yeah, it's unfortunate because we talk about this pain pill problem in the States, and then it's like they're giving it out like candy, and it's just there's so many things going on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, you know, us having these conversations, I think, is what's going to empower people to at least make the decisions themselves and maybe change the narrative. But at the end of the day, we can't, you know, control outcomes. We can control how we show up and what we do. And then hopefully that'll create the change that we want to see in the world.
Yeah. Last thing is like, what's interesting too, is that like, you know, the company who kind of like created and kind of marketed OxyContin, which was like the spearhead of opiates, literally the head of the FDA left his job to go work for them. And that started so much. And it's so interesting because I remember for me, you know, when I got my surgery and they prescribed me opiates, I remember I took it, I was like, okay. And then I took it again the second day, I was like, okay. And then I took it again the third day. But then I had remembered, like, I think by the fourth day, me taking like one pill, I could tell that it like slowly stopped working as well. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of incentivized to take two. I never did because I was very well aware of the problem. And so, yeah, it's a major problem. And when I look at kind of America, just kind of stepping at like a bird's eye view here, you know, you look at America, you have all sorts of different, you know, mental health issues. You have all sorts of economic problems. You have all sorts of problems when it comes to racism and abuse that's still very much alive and well. Then you throw in like the addiction problem, whether it's opiates, whether it's alcohol, these things that are available everywhere. And like statistically speaking, like you have every right, not every right, but you have every right to like fall down this rabbit hole and to fall down like a dark spiral like millions of people are. And so I personally feel like, again, like I'm not a opiate advocate or activist or anything like that. I barely know anything about it. But whether it's this or mental health problems or addictions, it's like, you can look at these statistics and you can be like, you know what? I'm actually going to do the opposite so that I can give hope for the younger or some other version of me that didn't grow up with a role model, didn't grow up with that whole NLP thing that you said about modeling someone. There's so many people out there who didn't grow up with role models. They don't know what they should be doing. And these different traps that exist, whether it's junk food or opiates or whatever it is. These traps, like they capture people and they hijack them, you know, and whether it's about the opiate itself or their own mental health or the junk food itself or their own mental health, it's a huge problem, you know, and I think we definitely got to talk about it. We have to raise more awareness. People just got to know these things exist and what they can do, and to rise up in the face of that and have hope and give people a different story to follow, because ultimately, like, that's what our society needs now more than ever. And Josh, you are one of these stories. Like, you are one of these stories where whenever I know anyone who has been diagnosed with some kind of a cancer or some kind of a similar experience, I always tell them to look you up. I always tell them to listen to our podcast interviews, because, dude, you are that person. Like, there's some other version of Josh out there who's like in the hospital bed, who, you know, is super scared, probably very angry, but they might come across your story and they'd be like, oh, wow, I actually have a different choice to make. So thank you, Josh, for everything that you do. And yeah, man, thank you for being on here. Thank you for being my first guest. I literally had so much fun. This was lit, man. I hope you had fun. I hope you enjoyed too. Any final words to the people?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing your kind words and having me on. It's always, I know we always have fun having these conversations because we're really passionate about it. We want to inspire that change in other people and help them become empowered to change their lives for the better of how they define that. And so, it's always a pleasure. And I appreciate the opportunity to share. And I mean, the only thing I would want to leave people with is, you know, just, you know, my little catchphrase there is fierce as a thought and thoughts can be changed. And just really taking a look at that and what that really means and represents, and how powerful it can be, you know, and that's how I've decided to live my life these last 12 years and continue to move forward. And it's wild to think back 12 years ago. What is today's 26th of April. So 12 years and 10 days since I first had a brain surgery. Wow. So it's pretty remarkable to be able to do what I want in my life the way I want and to be focused on purpose. And it makes sense why I've connected with people like yourself over the years. And I appreciate the work that you do as well. And again, thank you for having me on.
Of course, man. I need these conversations too. So I owe you one. But Josh, thank you so much. I hope everyone checks out everything you've got going on. We'll definitely have the links down below. Is there like a website or anything that you would want people to check out to connect with you or learn more about you or anything like that?
Yeah, my website's Josh Perry BMX or joshperrybmx.com, I should say. And you can find any of my social media off there, but it's all the same: LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. It's all just at Josh Perry BMX. I'm always happy to have conversations, especially ones like this, and see how I can help people. It's what I've dedicated my life to, and I love what I do, and I love helping people. And it's the most fulfilling thing that I never thought I'd be doing, is speaking in front of thousands of people that I don't know and running a coaching business and writing books and all that good stuff. So it's just pretty remarkable what being focused on something larger than yourself can lead you to doing.
And this is the beginning of the beginning. Josh, I appreciate you. I love you. I appreciate everyone out there for listening. This has been your host, Mark Matry. Woo!